Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Searching for NBA playoff coverage? We've got you. The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, gives you an inside look into the world of sports. Hosted by former NBA sharpshooter and Duke legend J.J. Redick and sportswriter Tommy Alter, The Old Man and the Three offers unprecedented access to the league. Tommy and J.J. discuss the NBA and interview some of the biggest names in the league, like Devin Booker and Luka Doncic. NBA final season is the perfect time to dive in, and you can listen to The Old Man and the Three wherever you get your podcasts. To hear episodes brought to you by BMW. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
You know me. I talk so fast, people check their 1.5 speed repeatedly when I'm on. So,
Hey, mine. Do either of you guys do 1.5 speed when you listen to podcasts?
I can't.
I don't, and I listen to a ton, and I don't.
I've tried. I can't.
Me too. Dalton, I listen to a ton of podcasts, and I think it is like I think it is truly psychotic behavior to listen to things at 1.5 speed.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
Good morning. It's Friday, September 30th. Welcome to the podcast sponsored by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation, the makers of Leqvio, Inclisiran. Dalton Del Don back for an encore performance. He was so great yesterday. We were like, you know what? Dalton, he's the GOAT. He's on a heater. Let's bring him back for the preview. Not really. It's not quite that eccentric. It's actually just he's scheduled to do it. Dalton, welcome to the week four preview show, buddy. What's going on with you, man, in the last 24 hours?
Yeah, not much has happened since last talking about it. I'm excited to be in the rotation this week. A lot to talk about previewing week four.
Yeah, week four, interesting slate. It does feel like a lot of good teams have matched up with each other and a lot of potentially dusty teams have matched up with each other. But there's a few of these dusty teams that are actually going to make some good fantasy games here. So let's just dive right into it. And we'll start with the London game. As you know out there, folks, usually I order these games in like besides the primetime games, order of like fantasy intrigue, stuff like that. I honestly think that this first game here, even though it is like it's the London game, it's in the rotation, Viking Saints. I actually kind of think there is a lot of fantasy intrigue in this particular matchup. Dalton and I are each going to give you one thing you need to know, one decision, crucial point there as you're setting your lineup. So we'll start here with Vikings -3 at the Saints, quote unquote, 43.5 over under. Dalton, what do people need to know about this game?
This one I wrote down, just be cautious with Dalvin Cook. You're starting him if he's active. For one thing, realize West Coasters, this game starts at 6:30 a.m. And he's no guarantee to play. He's labeled himself day-to-day. And on one hand, he's put up, I believe, 200 yards from scrimmage wearing this harness before. But on the other hand, Alexander Mattison, I can't pronounce the other guy's name, and Ty Chandler, they have three very capable backups there. The Saints are allowing the second lowest EPA per rush. By the way, also, this is a broader point, maybe because there's no actionable thing with Cook. You're probably playing him. I'm just saying temper expectations and definitely be aware that he might be a surprise inactive. Is the fact that Minnesota's new coaching staff that I was so excited for, Justin Jefferson, through three games, they actually have a slightly lower neutral pass rate than the dinosaur coaching staff of last season. It's 51% to 50%. So, man, not great. Not great, Bob. I'm not happy to see that through the first 3 weeks.
No, certainly not. I think obviously they've done more creative things schematically, like a lot more pre-snap motion, stuff like that. They're obviously playing a lot more 11 personnel. But yeah, this is still a team that has a great running back in Dalvin Cook. And, you know, even Kevin O'Connell, like, and, you know, offshoot from the Shanahan tree there. We know that he, you know, spent some time in Washington, everything like that. this is still a system that does want to run the ball. And even at times, like, McVay has been pretty conservative in terms of passing rate and stuff like that. So it just it could just be like a figuring out period from the pass rate perspective. But I do think your point is well taken, because I just made this point on my other podcast with James Coe, you know, that this whole idea that Justin Jefferson came out and was on the Ringer NFL show and said, like, I'm in the, like, Cooper Kupp's position, that's where I'm going to be at. You either have to believe two things. One, Justin Jefferson was just full of it, because he has definitely not been in the Cooper Kupp role. Or number two, we in the media need to take a look in the mirror about how we aggregate quotes. Because, you know, that's how it goes. Like, he says, Cooper Kupp's position, that's where I'm going to be at. Maybe he doesn't necessarily mean, like, I'm going to play in the Cooper Kupp role, but every goofball in the media afterwards, you know, comes out and, like, Justin Jefferson's going to be in the Cooper Kupp role. He said it. Here's the PFF quote graphic of via the Ringer NFL show. And, like, you know, it just goes on and on and on, and then becomes, like, an assumption. But so far, Dalton, he has absolutely not been used like Cooper Kupp, period.
I felt great about ranking him higher than Kupp the first two quarters when he was lighting it up, looking wide open with that Green Bay secondary. But it's been 10 straight quarters of quietness from Justin Jefferson. Yes. So maybe the defense adjusted to whatever they came out with right away. So I don't know. I'd rather Kupp moving forward, and wish I had him number one. And Jefferson, maybe that should have been my one to look forward to. Can they get Justin Jefferson open? Because the last 10 quarters, they've struggled.
They have struggled, and we've seen kind of two different ways to play it, right? Like, against the Eagles and Darius Slay, they just basically had Slay track him around the field. Slay's a great corner. I also think Justin Jefferson, it's worth pointing out, I don't think he's played great through those first these last two games. You know, there's certainly been, you know, not the best, some routes you can nitpick and stuff like that. No receiver is flawless, even if they sometimes think they are. But also then you saw in the Lions game, you know, Jeff Okuda, who's playing really well right now, you know, we forget that he was like a top three NFL draft pick and really, like, you know, kind of fell into the mire of the Matt Patricia era. Then he had an Achilles injury, but he's played really well. They have him do a lot of press coverage with a second set of eyes on Justin Jefferson. And it is funny, like, you can critique that point about Justin Jefferson, like, right? He has like 6 targets and 14 yards, something like that. He even said after the game, like, that was a great team, all capitals team wins, because I'm sure he's probably hearing it from people that drafted him in fantasy and stuff like that. But it's like, oh yeah, shoot, the Vikings did. They won that game. And, like, Adam Thielen had a big game. KJ Osborne had a big game. And that's what's going to happen with Justin Jefferson drawing that extra attention, is that other guys in this offense have to and will step up.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that not only Thielen hasn't gone off either. So, yes, I do expect some adjustments to be made. But the fact that their neutral pass rate is not significantly better than the Zimmer run team is just disappointing. Yeah. through 3 weeks. No question. So what are your thoughts on the Saints? I'm going to guess it involves a rookie wide receiver.
Yeah, we talked a lot about Chris Olave in our Stat Nerd episode. And, you know, you should go back and listen to that if you haven't already. I mean, Chris Olave is balling, man. He looks awesome. Leads the NFL in air yards by a country mile. He looks great too. The big question here, though, for the Saints is who's going to play from an injury perspective. And you're right to point out, Dalton, that this is an early start for us West Coast bros. Like, hey, don't go out on the town the night before and get hammered and, you know, sleep through the start of this game, because there's going to be a lot of injury designations, both with the Vikings running back situation and in this Saints passing game. So you need to be, hey, it's fantasy season, okay? Like, you need to put your social life aside for a second. Go out on Friday. Slam all the beers and all the margaritas you want on Friday night. And then you better focus up on Saturday night so you can make the right decisions. Make sure you're staying up for those Schefter bombs and all that type of stuff. So my point on saying all that is that the Saints have a lot of injury questions as well. Michael Thomas didn't practice on Thursday. Jameis Winston didn't practice on Thursday. Jarvis Landry did practice on Thursday. So I would bet he probably plays. Dalton, do you change any of your Chris Olave-based expectations if Andy Dalton plays instead of Jameis Winston? Because I think there's like a, right now, maybe 50-50 shot that Andy Dalton starts this game.
I mean, on one hand, no, because Winston's playing compromise. But on the other, they're very different quarterbacks, and you love lapping the league in air yards. So I would prefer Winston, I would say, because you just love the opportunities that Olave is getting. I think the second most deep targets in the league. But he's playing clearly injured. And at this point, it would not be a surprise if Dalton doesn't play. And the other key here is if Thomas is active or not. Because if there's an inactive Thomas, I don't care who's quarterbacking. I'm ranking Olave as a top 20. I'm just barely outside my top 20 as is. Those opportunities are no joke. And even if Thomas is active, he's probably going to be less than 100% with his toe injury that had a missed practice, I believe, Thursday. So, I wheels up for Olave no matter who's starting at quarterback. But I don't have a strong opinion about what, you know, I haven't grinded the tape enough to see what the difference is going to be. But do you have an opinion on Dalton versus Winston and how it affects the pass catchers?
Yeah, I may have grinded the tape. I think Olave is a true full field player. And yeah, of course, like with Winston, he can get like, there are some prayer yards and there's air yards, as we continue to say. But he's throwing up a lot of prayers right now. And that's great, is Jameis Winston. So he only needs with Winston like one or two catches to just make his fantasy day. But I think if Andy Dalton's back there, you know, we saw Darnell Mooney. I think this is worth pointing out that we saw Darnell Mooney last year with Andy Dalton have some of his best games, right? When Andy Dalton was under center later on in the season, when Allen Robinson was also hurt or, you know, playing through injuries, but coming back from COVID, all that kind of stuff that Robinson was dealing with last year. So, I think that's a worthwhile point, that Darnell Mooney is a speed-based receiver. Chris Olave is like 10x time better player than Darnell Mooney and had his best games even with this version of Andy Dalton last year. So I think that because Olave is a full field player, I would agree with you that it's almost no matter what, who starts at quarterback, but certainly if we get no Michael Thomas, I think it's wheels up for Olave no matter what this week. And the Vikings, as we talked about yesterday, are a bottom five pass defense right now from a success rate standpoint.
160 more air yards than the next most. Pretty crazy. Mandrews, as we call him. Mark Andrews, number two, but we'll talk about him more later. But yeah, Olave just lapping the field there. And Jacob Gibbs has a tweet saying basically over the last 3 years, the air yards leaders over the first 3 weeks of the season frequently finish as top 10 fantasy wide receivers. So, I mean, I know it's a small sample, but historically the precedent means they're going to finish with a big, big fantasy season.
Yeah, and he's a baller too. So when the opportunity, historical opportunity like that, and talent matches up, you got something really special. These top three receivers drafted this year, London, Wilson, and Olave, I mean, they're all so good. And we'll see who kind of emerges as the next guys. We'll probably talk about that later. I'm sure we did not expect Jaguars at Eagles 3 weeks ago to be one of the best fantasy games of the week, but it absolutely is. Jaguars at Eagles. Eagles are -7, 47 over under. Dalton, what do people need to know about this game?
Basically, there's just different game scripts for the running backs that they're used to. I like it. This sets up for Travis Etienne and not as well for Miles Sanders, as the Eagles have just comfortably been playing with this lead. Now they get, and he does not get targets. Now I expect this game to be relatively competitive. Jacksonville's allowed the lowest EPA per rush, just 3.1 yards per carry, and only one of three teams yet to allow a rushing score. So bad matchup for Miles Sanders, who doesn't really get the target. So I think he's been benefiting from these big leads in the second half. And then conversely, the Eagles, this is just a wild stat, but they're allowing more yards per carry than yards per pass attempt. I mean, it's 1.2 more, in fact. 5.4 yards per carry, 4.4 yards per pass. I mean, that is just absolutely wild. That's good for James Robinson. But here's the thing. I think Etienne, this sets up well as well, because Jacksonville, they trailed by 4 points or more on 68% of their plays last year. This year, just 24%. So it's totally different game script. This game's going to be close. The Eagles have been, both teams have been used to be playing with the lead. Could be the opposite for both these games. Definitely going to be a closer game. So I think Etienne's going to be more involved as a pass catcher than we've seen the first 3 weeks. Hopefully he can take advantage of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great call. Do you think Etienne's like a guy to trade for right now? I kind of think he is, just in case James Robinson gets hurt again. And like, he's kind of gotten involved a little bit more too, has Etienne the last few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, if Jacksonville's going to have a top three defense, especially if you're in a PPR league, yeah. I mean, just the expectations have to just be moved. You know, people were drafting Etienne in the third, fourth round. Don't expect that. But yeah, absolutely, he's going to be far more productive than he has been over the first 3 weeks.
For sure. It's also worth noting that while James Robinson is obviously coming back from a serious injury, so is Travis Etienne. This is basically his rookie year as well. And on the Eagles side of this, you know, it's funny, like I've been gassed up about the Eagles offense. I said on the recaps show last week that I think they're the best offense in the NFC. They might just be the best team in the NFC, period. But it is worth noting they haven't exactly faced like a murderer's row of competition, right? Like they play the Lions in week one. The Vikings defense is not very good. They beat them up in week two. They beat up on Washington last week, and Washington's pass defense totally has problems. But this Jaguars team like might be their first big test, which is crazy to say because of what we expect of the Jaguars, but the Jaguars offense looks great. And you are so right to point out that their rush defense is number one in success rate allowed. They're right up there as a pass defense too.
Like, yeah. Fourth fewest EPA per pass, fourth best. Yeah,
yes, exactly.
I mean, defense like, is playing so well.
Yeah. And Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker, like those dudes get after it, you know, up front. So the Eagles have a great offensive line. I think, you know, you're starting all of your Eagles fantasy players, but it is worth noting that this is kind of the first big test for Jalen Hurts and this offense. I think for this game, the thing I'm looking at is like, do the number two receiver workloads hold? Because we know Christian Kirk is that dude for Jacksonville. AJ Brown is that dude, period, for the Philadelphia Eagles. But Devontae Smith coming off a great game last week, he looked really good on that Monday night game against the Vikings too. Does he hold as like a starting receiver? And then Zay Jones. I mean, there's like so much damn Zay Jones talk on fantasy Twitter. It's kind of unbelievable. But he was still number three on the team in routes run, not by much, to Marvin Jones last week. And Marvin Jones actually saw like an absurd amount of air yards, led the team in air yards last week. He leads the team in air yards through the first 3 weeks. Like, obviously, you know, 10 catches on 11 targets for Zay Jones, 4 catches on 7 targets for Marvin Jones. I wouldn't say that Marvin Jones has looked all that great the last 2 years either. So I just think it's worth wondering on the whole Zay Jones thing. Like, if he's going to continue to be a sleeper, I do think he has to push Marvin Jones a little farther out of the rotation here.
Yeah, tougher matchup this week for Jacksonville receivers. Kirk, 78% of his routes run have been out of the slot. They've just been matching him up against the linebacker and just so smart with his usage. But a tougher matchup this week, so I expect Jacksonville's running backs to be involved. And then quickly about that defense, man, very frequently every year there's defenses that are just underrated based on paper entering the year, and they can quickly change. And often it's by drafting linemen early. And, you know, they've done that the last couple of years. And I think maybe they're not as good and they benefited from schedule or whatever as a top three unit, but I do think we need to reevaluate and consider this Jacksonville defense to be one of the, you know, suddenly a bad matchup as opposed to a favorable one for fantasy.
Could not agree more. Let's move to Bills -3 at Baltimore Ravens. 51.5 over under here for this game. Dalton, hit me with the Mandrews hype, baby.
Man, where does he go if we had a draft today? I mean, not even just tight end premium leagues. I mean, given the huge positional advantage, I mean, he is just so much better. Travis Kelce, but then you fall down to the third and fourth. I mean, the difference between him is so much wider than any other position. He leads all pass catchers in target share. And target per route run rate, third in air yards or second, depending on which one you look at. The last 17 games, Adam Levitan tweeted 116 catches, 1,420 yards and 12 touchdowns. I mean, that wasn't with Lamar Jackson the whole time, who leads the NFL by a wide margin in target rate to tight ends the last 5 years and appears determined to win the MVP this year. I mean, just dating back from last year, Andrews, when Marquise Brown is off the field, his numbers are through the roof, and it's going to be that way this whole season. So as much as we like Bateman, the target hog, it's not there. So, I mean, is Andrews the top three pick? Is he the number one overall pick? I mean, how high does he go in a PPR draft right now?
Well, let's put it this way. ADP from August, Travis Kelce was 14th overall. Mandrews was 26th overall. Kyle Pitts and George Kittle, 33 and 37th overall. Neither of those is looking very good. Kittle, we'll talk about that later on. He way over 14 overall for Mark Andrews. I mean, especially with the way some of the some of the receivers have been fine, the first round receivers, right? Like Jefferson had his one big game. We just talked about him. Jamar Chase has been fine. He's like a positive regression candidate anyways. Stephon Diggs has been one of the best picks you could make in the late part of the first round. The running backs there have been a bit mercurial. So yeah, I think like Andrews would, I don't know about first or fourth overall or something like that, but I don't know. I mean, seven, six, something like that. I think he would be pretty tempting because he's had, if Kelce was going at 14th overall, I think Mandrews has outkicked expectations even from what Kelce would have done.
Yeah, I think there's an argument for even higher, but certainly top 10, I think he would go for sure now. And it's more to come, man. It just looks like Jackson, Lamar Jackson and Andrews were the home run picks if you drafted them this year.
And you didn't have to draft them anywhere close to their ceiling, even for Lamar Jackson, too. And look, I mean, I still think Bateman's going to have a great year, but he's going to be a bit more volatile. Whereas Andrew, I think the analysis was right to call like Rashad Bateman an obvious breakout candidate when Marquise Brown got traded. But it was also like we should have been, okay, Mandrews, like I know both of us had Mandrews as our tight end one coming into this year. Like, and that was like, I think it was obvious. Like, I think that was definitely the obvious correct answer there. I'll stick on this game too and go with the Bills side of things here. My question is just, do the Bills go back to their week one wide receiver distribution? Because really this is the first time that this is the first time that we're going to see these receivers like all together in a normal condition, right? In week two, there's no Gabe Davis against the Titans. Jake Kumerow is running out there in the Gabe Davis role and he's not Gabe Davis. Week three, obviously they have that insane like Miami Heat situation going on. Like Stephon Diggs is coming in and out of the game. Gabe Davis still not 100%. He drops a touchdown in that game. Isaiah McKenzie balls out, but is that all just due to the Heat? So yeah, I think that's the big question, is just the Bills like wide receiver distribution, because nobody is getting less out of their running game right now than the Buffalo Bills.
One thing to note, the Ravens are allowing the second most targets to running backs this year, 11.3 targets to running backs. So maybe Singletary is active involved that way, but that's just a guessing game at this point. So this is going to be a great DFS matchup here when debating between which quarterback to pay up for, Allen or Lamar Jackson. I don't think there's a wrong answer here, but it's kind of worth noting that the Bills have allowed the second fewest yards per play this season, while the Ravens have allowed the second most yards per play this season. So, I mean, these defenses are playing diametrically opposite, but of course, Buffalo's dealing with a number of injuries as well. But hopefully this is this high scoring back and forth and both quarterbacks light it up.
Yeah, it should be. It should be. I feel pretty good about that. All right, next game up here, we got Chargers -7 at the Houston Texans, 44.5 over under. Maybe I've got this game ranked a little too high, but it is intriguing from a Chargers perspective, right? Because they're so banged up right now. We were talking about it before the show. It doesn't really matter who the coach is. Doesn't matter who the front office is. Doesn't matter who the players are. The best, like, the Chargers lose players to injuries at an absurd rate every year, and it's always like their best players get hurt. Like Joey Bosa, we know, is out for some time. Rashawn Slater going to miss the rest of the season. There's injuries elsewhere on the offensive line with Corey Linsley. You know, J.C. Jackson, he's not, like, his ankle surgery isn't responding. There's inflammation in the ankle that he just got surgically repaired. Like, and we know Justin Herbert's got, you know, busted up ribs or whatever. So my big question though here is just like, how much work does Keenan Allen get if he is healthy? Because I think Keenan Allen, like, this might be the last chance you have to buy him low, because I think he's coming off injury, whatever. I think just the way the Chargers receivers look right now and the way the offensive line is banged up, it just sets up for Keenan Allen to just get like 12, 13, 14 targets every single week.
It really does. Yeah, totally. They can't run the ball successfully. No other receiver emerged. I shouldn't be such a Keenan Allen hater. I'm just an ageist, but he's a local guy.
You are
guy.
An ageist, yeah.
Local Cal guy, you know. I mean, yeah, he's just going to probably eat out of the slot. Hopefully he returns fully healthy and it's not one of these, you know, soft tissue injuries that recurs.
That's true.
But I like him in this, and if he can return to immediately going back to being, a wide receiver one for your fantasy team. And then Josh Palmer, do you have any thoughts on him while we're here?
No, I don't. I don't have any thoughts other than, like, if you could read between the lines of, I think Keenan Allen's going to eat 12, 13, 14 targets every single week. Based on the construction of the Chargers' other receivers and the way that offense has played over the last few weeks, I think Keenan Allen, the best separation receiver on this roster by 3 or 4 country miles, okay? Like, he's going to, you can get my thought on Josh Palmer there. What about the running backs here, Dalton? Because, you know, for all of the, like, freak out about Austin Eckler, he is getting a lot of receiving usage, and you know that's another thing that could continue here as well with all of these offensive line injuries. But their running game is, I mean, it's rough, really rough right now with the Chargers.
So I made Texans my best bet this week. I liked it more, obviously, before the spread moved from 7 down to 5.5. And I say that because I expect this to be a close game, or game script wise, for Damian Pierce. 35 carries to just 3 the last 2 weeks with Rex Burkhead. 3 goal line carries. Yes, 2 fumbles, but Lovie Smith has said he's not going to punish him for that. 2 really nice plays as a receiver last week. I repeatedly say Davis Mills plays so, so much better at home. So many injuries on the Chargers defense. It's really going to help there. And then conversely, I mean, Eckler's going in the opposite direction. It's not all his fault by any stretch of the imagination. And he is facing a Texans defense that's allowed the second most fantasy points. But man, Ian Harditz tweeted this. Austin Eckler's PPR rank this season is 31 in quarters 1 through 3. It's RB3 in the fourth quarter. So I just don't know how sustainable all those dump-offs are in the fourth quarter, saving his PPR value. The lowest running back explosive rush rate this season was 0%. Lowest yards per carry, lowest yards per catch. Those are all 3 Austin Eckler. So again, not all his fault by any stretch of imagination. It's not like Sony Michel's dominating or something. It's something. And Corey Linsley hurt the center. Slater left tackle down. I mean, this is a coaching questions. Lot going on in LA there. A lot going on, and it's not a lot positive.
Not a lot positive, that's for sure. If you could say one thing, they're probably going to be in these like fourth quarter comeback situations quite often, right? So at least you could say that, because this team doesn't look very good on paper, at least based on the expectations. Like, I mean, the Chargers were talking like Super Bowl, you know, contenders this year. Like, oh, we got all the guys around Justin Herbert now. And this now it's looking like a potential just – they got to get this thing right fast, or it's going to be a lost season here quickly because of all the injuries. Damian Pierce, though. Damian Pierce, so we talked about him a little bit on yesterday's show. I feel pretty good about him coming into this game.
Yeah, I really like it. Like I said, dominating the carries over Burkhead recently, and not the Chargers have so many injuries they're dealing with. Expect this to be a close game, and Pierce just passes the eye test, man. Burkhead's still there for the passing down work and all that, but man, I really think for Pierce, it's coming. He's going to cash in some of these goal line opportunities, and man, it's just so clear when he's on the field versus Burkhead that there's just a way more explosion. And man, I'm telling you, Houston just plays far better at home. I don't know what it is with Davis Mills, but his home road splits are just absolutely dramatic. Yes, he's looked really, really bad at times this year. I totally get it, but for whatever it is, he just plays better in Houston.
You know, it's funny too, like the Chargers make all these upgrades on their defense, or they bring in Khalil Mack, and obviously now, of course, they're going to be missing Joey Bosa. Like the drop off from Bosa and Mack to the rest of the like edge defenders there, especially from a run perspective, is rough. And Jerry Tillery's still on this team, like Kenneth Murray is still on this team. These guys, like, and they're getting beat up by opposing offenses at this point. So we'll see, man. I think this could be this. Texans got to show us something from a passing game standpoint as well, too. Brandon Cooks has like by far the lowest catch rate of his career at this point. So let's move on to another game here. Seahawks at Lions. Lions -4.5, 48 over under. Dalton, this got to be the Jamal Williams show this week, huh?
Yeah, man. I mean, he was the number 3 fantasy back last week. Do you know that Williams is actually the number 7 fantasy back this season? He's been on my bench the whole year in that league we're in together. I didn't realize he's doing that well. It's all the goal line work, man. But anyway, now he takes over for DeAndre Swift. Yes, there will be Craig Reynolds. We'll absolutely see work here. But man, he ranks first in carry. Williams ranks first in carries inside the 10 and inside the 5 this year. He's a capable receiver as well. And Amon-Ra St. Brown is battling an ankle injury. Detroit is first in pace. Seahawks are allowing 4.9 yards per carry, the 3rd most rushing scores. Detroit's actually home favorites. So, I mean, you like the game script there. So it doesn't always work so perfectly. You know, the backup comes in. And again, there will be Craig Reynolds. But, man, on a Detroit team that loves to run the ball with the defense and Amon-Ra St. Brown battling injury, it really looks like a perfect setup here for Williams.
Any concern that, like, you know, last year when DeAndre Swift went down, Jamal Williams is just kind of like, whatever, in those replacement games?
Some concern, but again, they're home favorites. They opened as near touchdown favorites, and Goff is, I mean, they're playing pretty well, and I just think this is a different setup. Even Hockenson is banged up. Josh Reynolds and Chark are all questionable, too, so I could just see a real projected a heavy workload against, even though Seattle doesn't run any plays on their offense, their opponents do. So I don't know. I just think this setup here just looks nice.
Yeah, just worth remembering.
For sure, it's worth remembering. Like, yeah. I said, sometimes it's not always a perfect, like, you know, replacement like that. But man, looking at these other questionable running back matchups, and I mean, I just ranked him super aggressive. I put Williams as my RB5 this week.
Yeah, he's tapped out at a ceiling of RB20 in the three games that DeAndre Swift missed in full PPR, like RB20. So, you know.
Well, he's RB7 this year with Swift playing.
So I know, yeah. Different. No, I things he's are different.
Doing the Lions, he's doing the hump. He's doing the Key and Peele sketch, getting 15-yard penalties, yeah. Dancing afterward. Come on, man. Quit this Jamal Williams hate. Come on.
Hey, listen, let me tell you what, buddy. He is like, if Christian McCaffrey sits, he's about to be my RB1 on one of my dynasty teams. So I am rooting for Jamal Williams hard in this game here. Okay, on the Seattle side, super clear in the pass game, right? Like it's the DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett show. It's like nothing has really changed. Just there's a little bit less ceiling in the offense because Russell Wilson has a great deep ball theoretically. And you know, like those guys are, but I think both these guys are still like flex plays, Lockett and Metcalf. This is a pretty good matchup. But then it's not clear at all in the running game. They did just put Travis Homer on IR, did the Seattle Seahawks. And you know, Kenneth Walker had a lot of targets last week. He actually has been targeted on 75% of his routes run so far this year, but he's still like way down in terms of actual routes run. So it's just kind of weird there with the Kenneth Walker thing. Any interest in any of the backs here at all? Or is it just like Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, log out, forget the rest of the Seahawks?
Yeah, it's the latter. I mean, I'm still stashing my guy Penny, but you can't use him now unless you're desperate and you're starting fantasy lineups. Seattle is just so funny. Their pass rate is like 10% higher this year without Russell Wilson. It's just really funny. Love this matchup here. So Derek Carty's the blitz. He projects Geno Smith to be the fourth highest scoring quarterback this week behind only Hurts, Allen, and Jackson. Loves the setup here and their pass happy ways and obviously the Lions indoors. So Geno might be an underrated DFS option if you're looking to punt.
Lions are 24th in dropback success rate allowed and dead last in rushing success rate allowed. So, yeah. All right, Rashad Penny, 120 yards and 2 touchdowns in this game. It'll be like it's like a 2021 all over again. Browns -1.5 at the Atlanta Falcons, 49.5 over under. We both basically said kind of that, like, had similar thoughts here. Mine was these are two very concentrated teams. Like, we know who's going to get the football on these two teams. And yours was this is a sneaky, strong DFS matchup, which so basically we're kind of on the same train here is that this looks like an underrated fantasy game.
Yeah, speaking of sneaky DFS, Brissett is the stone minimum on Yahoo, $20 salary. The Falcons have allowed the 10th most fantasy points to QBs, third most passing touchdowns. Amari Cooper went from week one in Cleveland to way up there in target share and just looking top five in target share and third in air yardage share this season, even with the quiet week one. And now he plays the first game indoors. A really nice matchup. So yeah, Drake London, you look at all the nerd stats, he's getting the targeted like crazy on play action and on first down. Both of those are worth nearly 20% more than your regular target. Last week, you know, you look at the box score, it's like, oh, he only got 6 targets. Well, Mariota only threw it 20 times. This week, Nick Chubb may be running all over. If I'm wrong about Brissett, then Nick Chubb's going to, you know, score 3 touchdowns. I think it's going to be a high scoring game indoors and a lot of fantasy points on both sides. Love the Drake again this week. And, you know, one of these weeks, Kyle Pitts will have a full big 4 quarters. Last week, it was a big first half and then a quiet second.
Yeah, that's the problem with the Falcons is just that there's not enough like pass volume for these guys both to eat in 1 week, but they can both be playable. Kyle Pitts can be playable like he was last week. Nobody better turn their nose up at 87 yards for your tight end. And you know, Drake London also got in the box last week too. So, and this is just
if there
like
ever was
matchup.
Week, it might be this one though. If both these teams rank top five in combined points allowed per games this year, both these teams. So for what it's worth, if there ever is a week that both can be fantasy blowups, it might be this one.
Yeah, weirdly, the Browns pass defense has like not been that good. Like they've allowed, and I mean, look, they haven't even had a very good. They haven't had a lot of like tough teams that they faced. Right, they played Joe Flacco, Jets, and they played Mitch Trubisky and the Steelers. Like, give me a break. The last 2 weeks, and Baker, they played freaking Baker Mayfield in week one. So, and even still, I think their pass defense has been disappointing. Myles Garrett, we know, is like had a serious car wreck too.
Great
so,
call.
Like,
I forgot to say that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, I mean, I'm not expecting him to play in this game, but maybe he does either way. Like they're without Jadeveon Clowney's been missing time too. So, I think that like this sets up really well for the Falcons. It sets up really well for the Falcons and on the Browns side too. Yeah, just like David Njoku is back in our lives, man. I feel like such a jackass for dropping him in one league after being so excited for him. And, you know, he's way off the waiver wire at this point. I got to rock with Gerald Everett, who's at least he's faster than some of the Chargers receivers.
I saw him. He went for one NFFC league. Vlad Sedler said for $801 out of 1,000 in Njoku this week. And I get it. You know, part that is explains how weak the waiver wire is throughout fantasy football right now. I mean, it is barren. If you're lucky enough to get Khalil Herbert, congrats. But a lot of leagues out there, there's absolutely nothing. My hot take of the week is Marcus Mariota outscores Patrick Mahomes. I think he's going to have a really nice fantasy matchup. And he's running the ball more than people realize. And I really like I mean, Mariota's fumbling like crazy. And he may not be the starter for, you know, for the whole second half of the year, but I think he's going to have a real nice fantasy game this week, whereas Mahomes is a tough setup.
I think he's played well enough to hold off a third-round rookie, but that's another talking point. Would you rather? I know we're recording this on Thursday.
8.1 so. YPA, I agree. No, I think Mariota's been fine. I just hear a lot of hate, and I just maybe I'm just buying it.
He still just makes a ton of mistakes. Would you rather play Tua on Thursday night, which people are going to hear this on Friday morning, so LOL. But this is definitely just not my personal question for my fantasy team. Would you rather pick up Mariota off the waiver wire or play Tua tonight?
I have Mariota ranked higher this week.
Oh, great. Well, that's going to be a fun next few hours for me.
What about when you mean Mario's going to go? I mean, so, yeah, Tua will go crazy. I hate talking about the games I already have, but for what it's worth, the Bengals have allowed.
This is just for me.
Allowed the fifth fewest EPA per pass this year. So if Tua goes nuts tonight, then all the more props to him playing injured on a short week.
Oh, terrific. All right. Commanders at Cowboys. Cowboys are 3.5-point favorites, 41.5 over under. This is, I mean, a week over under here, which makes sense. My thing here is, can we avoid another like Wentz wagon goes in the gutter game? Like the wagon just careens right off the road. Cause that's pretty much what we got last week. Like, oh my God, Carson Wentz. It was funny. Cause there's a few Commanders fans after the first couple games are like, all right, 300, you know, plus yards. Like he's slinging it around. And then it's like, oh, right. He's Carson Wentz, and he's going to have those games where he absolutely just puts you in the gutter. And that's pretty much what we got last week, to the point that, you know, Jahan Dotson, 2 catches on 8 targets. Curtis Samuel gets a ton of targets, but they, you know, they're a little 3-yard ADOT, give me a break type of targets. Terry McLaurin actually managed to go over 100 yards, but it was, you know, in desperation mode there late in the game. So that's kind of my question here. Cowboys, not exactly like the softest landing spot either. They pressured the absolute hell out of Daniel Jones on Monday night, and Carson Wentz, not exactly the cleanest guy, went under pressure.
That was such a weird game last week. I think the Eagles only scored in the second quarter, yet won ease comfortably. And I just expected Carson Wentz more of the same garbage time stats. So you got to impress with the Eagles defense, not even allowing any prevent stuff there. Could definitely be ugly against the Dallas pass rush. This game was my weakest thing to look for. It's like Dalton Schultz's availability because tight end is so bad. CeeDee Lamb, we've talked about him, and I moved him up to my wide receiver, I think 6 this week. I'm back in. Rush looks capable, and he's getting all the targets. So, you know, playing indoors, so this matchup's not too exciting for me yet. Can Wentz stay upright, and how many turnovers basically will he commit?
Yeah, Washington is 25th in dropback EPA allowed. Like Jack Del Rio has not figured that thing out. Not figured a lot out. Has Jack
Gallup maybe Gallup season debut something to pay attention to? You know, but I mean, don't use him right away.
No. But I do think he's worth stashing because being fully back will probably intersect with when Dak comes back. Although Rush is playing well enough at this point, like I don't think they should rush Dak back. But that's I don't know. Who knows what the Cowboys will do? If Cooper Rush beats Washington, Jerry Jones might waltz into the coaching room and be like, hey, we're playing Cooper Rush going forward. Who the hell knows? Dallas Cowboys, give me a break. Totally. All right. Speaking of break, Dalton and I are going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll preview the rest of the Week 4 games.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, Dalton, Jets at Steelers. Steelers -3, 41.5 over under. I issued a public apology to Geno Smith because I said many times during the offseason that the Seahawks were running out an unserious quarterback situation for this year. The Steelers, because they have now taken that title over. I apologize to Geno Smith, who's played pretty well this year. The Steelers, although they have a promising young guy on the bench, and like the Seahawks had Drew Lock on the bench, which is, you know, why it was so unserious, they're just rolling with Mitch, man. And it feels like, it feels not good. But so neither one of us have like a Steelers note for our things to know, because it's just like, you start Deontay Johnson because he gets a 30% target share. No, literally, you know, snow, rain, whatever, it doesn't matter. Quarterback, like, you know, freaking a cat could go out there and start for the Steelers at quarterback, and they throw the ball, you know, with their damn tail 30% of the time to Deontay Johnson. But so it really, it's about the Jets. And you've got a note on the running back here.
Well, I'll say real quickly about Deontay Johnson. I moved him up. The Jets are a severe pass funnel D for what it's worth. EPA, good against the rush, bottom three against the pass. So it's a nice setup for Deontay Johnson to actually maybe do something with his dozen targets. But so love Breece Hall, but briefly, let's talk about the quarterback switch here. So Joe Flacco targeted 26% of his attempts to running backs. And I heard this stat. I'm not sure if it's true, but the most pass attempts in NFL history over the first three games, Flacco. I mean, that's pretty wild. Oh, and last year, comparatively, Zach Wilson targeted his running backs 18%. So that's going to drop. But Breece Hall, he's one of only five running backs seen 6+ targets a game. Looks really good. He's up there in explosive run rate, too. I believe fourth in the league. So this rookie's getting more and more snap share percentage higher as the season has progressed. So I'm ready for him to take off. And Pittsburgh D missing Watt is not the elite unit it once was. So love Breece Hall and Deontay Johnson in this matchup. Specifically,
yeah, Breece Hall is interesting because I think you could start to he leads the NFL in targets per route run, 35%.
Wow,
is just insane. I mean, he's the number two guys are Jalen Waddle and Mandrews, so like that's the company that Breece Hall keeps as a receiver. Now it's worth wondering, right? Does any of that stay when Joe Flacco gets out of there? I honestly have no idea. I really don't know. They are getting him like for a running back. Downfield-ish targets. Like, you know, Javonte Williams is the second highest running back in targets per route run, and he's at -1 air yards per target. Breece Hall, for comparison, is 4.2 air yards per target. Yeah. So that's like prime David Johnson type of stuff, right? And this is the middle and end of the season is when rookie running backs really start to like separate from the crowd. If they're going to like David Johnson, great example there, you know, was playing behind dusty Chris Johnson because Chris Johnson could read the blocking scheme better and all this type of, you know, stuff. And then, oh, lo and behold, they start playing David Johnson towards the end of the season. And he starts ripping that thing up. So Breece Hall, I think, is a really good buy. But I do, I'm interested in the receiving workload as well with Zach Wilson back there. And yeah, my thing is talk about receiving workload. What does the passing offense period look like with Zach Wilson? You know, it is funny. I saw another Ian Hartis reference here. A lot of Ian Hartis pop on the pod. He said, like, you know, Elijah Moore truthers. I'm paraphrasing here. Last year, it was like, Elijah Moore, look at how good he is when Zach Wilson doesn't play. And now it's like Elijah Moore truthers, like, oh, now this is going to unlock Elijah Moore because Zach Wilson is back. And like, yeah, you kind of have.
I sheepishly raised my hand when I read that tweet.
Oh, yes. Man, I replied. I literally just replied, hey, man, come on. Like, don't call us out like that. But yeah, like here's the thing about the Jets receivers. Elijah Moore is very, very good. He's a very, very good player. Garrett Wilson might be like a transcendent talent. That's how good he has been through the first 3 weeks. And that's how good his separation looks. That's how good he looks in the open field. No kidding. That's why he went 10th overall in the damn NFL draft. But do you want to start either of these Jets receivers with Zach Wilson's, you know, first game back? The Steelers pass defense hasn't been as great as it typically is. They've had issues. They're missing TJ Watt overall. They're 23rd in dropback success rate allowed.
I have them both as wide receiver threes. Yes, inside I have them mid early 30s. One thing I'll note about Garrett Wilson is they're using him out of the slot quite a bit, that is where Zach Wilson really was top three in target rate to the slot for what it's worth as a rookie. So that might be a nice setup for him as well. But Wilson's up there in end zone target leaders this year as a rookie. I mean, it's just so impressive. We talked about it yesterday, but this setup, even Michael Carter's good. I bring up Breece Hall, but between their running backs and those two receivers and their cornerbacks. The Jets have the most impressive young units in the league. Let's see if Zach Wilson can take advantage of it now. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I agree. We need to see it. All right. Next one here, Broncos at Raiders. Raiders are 2.5-point favorites, 45.5 over under. Hey, all that bloviating, all that talk we did about the damn AFC West in the offseason, like, wow, this division, wow, it's going to fireworks every single week. And now I'm looking at these two teams, I'm like, thank God this is not on Sunday Night Football or something again.
Yeah, no doubt. No, absolutely. It's I have a hot take here, though. So watching these two Broncos receivers, I admit that Sutton just looks more like the alpha just for the eye test so far through 3 weeks. But I think this is the quiet week that Jerry Jeudy smashes here. All right. So I said to give him a pass the last 2 weeks. He left injured. Then he was not playing a full complement of snaps when he was dealing with this rib injury, not practicing. Well, he is back practicing fully this week. He's not labeled on the injury report. He was a top 12 PPR receiver in week one. And now here's the key. He faces is a pass funnel Raiders defense has allowed the second most fantasy points to the slot. Jeudy's run 66% of his routes there. They've allowed the second fewest fantasy points to outside receivers, where Sutton's run 85% of his routes. It doesn't always work that way, but playing indoors, I think it's a kind of a nice setup against the Raiders defense. Again, of course, it doesn't work out this way. Normally, I like to avoid these cornerback matchup stuff, but this is the week I'm going to say Jeudy smashes.
Hey, I don't hate it, man. I still think, yeah, when you watch these guys, like, it's clear that Sutton, like, he doesn't really get separation. And I think that's a problem, like, in the long term. You know, he's been getting a ton of targets the last 2 weeks. No kidding. He's, like, the only healthy, functional Broncos receiver out there. Like, they're not really playing Alberto anymore. His route participation drops every single week. That's a bunch of goofball tight ends. You know, Kendall Hinton catches the big, like, improv pass, you know, when Russell Wilson finally scrambled around in the pocket. This Broncos offense stinks. Like, Russ's best play right now is throwing a fastball to Javonte Williams out of the backfield. Like, somebody tweeted me the gif of when I pointed that out on Twitter, somebody tweeted the gif of Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite, like, rocking in the football at Napoleon on the bike. And that's basically what Javonte Williams' targets from Russell Wilson look like right now. He's just, like, throwing heaters to dump off. When has Russell Wilson ever been a dump off guy out of the backfield? Anyways, so I'm with you that, like, Jerry Jeudy, like, they need him to step up. I don't know that Jerry Judy's a great receiver himself, but I think there's just so much room beyond Sutton and for somebody to step up here.
Man, there was a lot of hype of his route running and coming from college. You don't think it's overrated. That, though, for Jeudy? Overrated. Yeah, okay. All right. For one game, I think out of the slot, he can eat in this perfect setup. Then conversely, though, do you realize that the Broncos, yes, a favorable schedule has helped, but they have not allowed a top 12 fantasy QB or a top 24 fantasy running back or receiver this season, their defense, for what it's worth.
Yeah, their defense is good. Like, they haven't, you know, you said schedule hasn't been great. You'd think that their offense would perform better with the schedule not being as great as it is. But the schedule's favorable, but their defense, I think, is legit good. Like, Pat Surtain is a baller, man. Like, you know, at the cornerback position, he was up in Brandon Ayuk's grill on several of those poorly timed Jimmy Garoppolo throws. Ayuk got the better of him, and of course, Jimmy misses him. I'm not saying this because I'm tilting about it or anything, but just pointing it out. Yeah, for me, too, in this game, honestly, it's just like Mac Hollins. Is this really going to be a thing? It better not be.
It looks like Renfro, is he continuing to miss practice too? But yeah, I mean, career journeyman, you got to figure that Adams is going to go back to getting his, and there's still Waller there, and this is a tough matchup. So no, I'm not starting Hollins with confidence, but pretty crazy. What a DFS slate breaker last week he was.
All right, next game up, Titans at Colts. Colts -3, 42.5 over under. These two teams are really, really straightforward, Dalton. We mostly know who gets the ball, who plays in these two, especially the Colts, man. But we do both want to talk about some rookie receivers, so you hit me first.
Just quickly, Treylon Burks, I know last week I said it's coming out party. Maybe I was 1 week early. Colts have a pass funnel defense, ranks bottom 5 in EPA per pass, top 5 in EPA per rush. And if they're allowing an NFL low 2.6 yards per carry. He's getting a lot of targets per route run rate. Let's just see a bigger opportunity Sunday.
Yeah, let's see if he can run something other than a crosser against zone coverage. That would be
so.
Nice.
You're skeptical, okay? So you're still skeptical.
I say that, and he'll probably go out and have the big game that you're talking about. But I'm just telling you, like, it's still obvious why they don't want to give him a full workload, because he's a developmental player. He's learning a whole new position, Dalton, like from what he did in college. So I think
this defense they're facing is going to force him to pass far more than usual. So it's also going to be very interesting to see if Derrick Henry, who had the career high in targets last week, after I go on Fantasy Football Live and talk about how he's someone to panic over, even though I said that matchup was good last week. But now, if he, it's another perfect matchup for him to see a bunch of work in the receiving game, and we would have to readjust all of our priors if that becomes. I mean, then I don't care how, what his foot, you know, exact. He may not be, he doesn't have to be 60% of the former running back. He could be super valuable if he suddenly becomes a pass catcher.
100%, man. My thing for this game is rookie receiver as well. Does Alec Pierce continue to rise? Like, we need to stop playing Paris Campbell, okay? Like, the fact that Paris Campbell is now healthy all the time is just revealing the fact that he's actually not that good of a wide receiver. Alec Pierce, I think, might be a good wide receiver. He has the highest air yards per target on the team in his return last week from a week two concussion. Only runs, you know, 20 routes, you know, way down there compared to Michael Pittman or Paris Campbell. But I think the Colts need an extra dimension in the passing offense right now. I mean, I believe Michael Pittman's like a true top 15 alpha receiver, but you know, they need a second guy. Does Pierce can, you know, emerge as that player? And, you know, he's might be a guy that we're picking up off waiver wires in a few weeks. So just keep his name on your radar. Next game up here, Cardinals at Panthers. Panthers are 1.5 point favorites, 42.5 over under. It is worth noting, as we're recording this right now, we're getting reports from Adam Schefter, from Joe Person of The Athletic, who's covered the team forever. Christian McCaffrey not at Panthers practice during the open media portion for the second straight week with a quad injury. Now, obviously, CMC said a couple of weeks ago, like, he could go to and take a leak and be on the injury report. Well, it sounds like he's got a little more than a leak situation going on here with the quad injury. So I don't know, man. Worth monitoring. I've had a few people ask me, you know, who's the pickup? Is it Chuba Hubbard? Is it Donta Foreman? If Christian McCaffrey doesn't go, let me tell you what, I don't want the RB1 of this Panthers offense that, as we talked about yesterday, is 31st in plays run despite being the fastest offense in the NFL, if his name is not Christian McCaffrey.
Agreed. I've ignored the backup situation here. Does this mean more targets for our guy DJ Moore? There's some concern Byron Murphy, but this Arizona defense is 2 sacks, 5th most fantasy points allowed outside receivers. That's where Moore's run 77% of his routes this year. So is this the week, or if it's ever going to happen?
32nd in dropback success rate allowed, the Arizona Cardinals. Like, it has to be this week. But the thing is, can Baker Mayfield just put on his big boy pants and play well? Like, I don't want to hear Matt Rhule, like, in his press conference today saying, well, the receiver's got to get better separation. You know, if you get open, you get the ball. It's like, Matt Rhule, shut up, man. Like, your quarterback stinks. Everybody that's watching it can tell that he is playing horribly. And it's like, you can make any excuse you want, but just come out and say, like, this, on our third try here, we've probably struck out at the quarterback position. So Baker Mayfield just has to play well, period. That's the deal. That's the analysis with DJ Moore. Like, and I mean, obviously there's issues with the structure and the design of the offense and the way they use him. So yeah. Yeah.
And can I quickly pump the brakes on Kyler Murray this week too?
Yes,
another guy I'd rather have Marcus Mariota starting over. His 5.6 YPA is better only than Mitch Trubisky's, and he's played every game indoors. Put differently, 2nd in pass attempts, 12th in yards. This week matchup's a low total. Arizona ranks last in pace, toward the bottom of the league in pre-snap motion and play action. So it's not all Murray's fault either. Donkey coaching. I mean, he's benefited so much. This Cardinals team has trailed 31-0 after the first quarter of games, or first 3 weeks. He's just really benefited from game script, too. He's curtailed his rushing after signing the big contract. 40% fewer carries, 45% fewer rushing yards per game compared to his prior marks. Now they travel to play an early game outdoors against the Carolina defense, allowing just 5.9 YPA. So 4th fewest points to fantasy QBs. So, yeah, no thanks to Kyler Murray this week.
Yeah, not ideal. All right, next game up, Patriots at Packers. Packers, 10-point favorites, 40.5 over under. Mac Jones is out there saying, like, hey, I might go, whatever. We'll see. My big thing for this game is, does Romeo Doubs hold as the wide receiver one for this team? You know, I thought what was interesting going back and watching that game is just how often Romeo Doubs is like the first read for Aaron Rodgers, especially early in the game. And, like, you know, they were really complimentary about him after the game. I think Doubs, like, should be on every single waiver, or should be on every single, like, roster. He should be rostered in 100% of leagues, all that stuff. And, like, there's a chance he might just be the best receiver on this team right now.
he's 100% the receiver I would prefer to roster the most on the Packers is Dobbs. Hopefully that was a sign of things to come last week. Quickly, I want to talk about the New England backfield. It's hard to decipher who's the lead here. It just appears that Damian Harris and Stevenson are rotating series. So you cannot pay attention to snap percentage like most situations here, because that is just dependent on how long that specific drive happened to happen. So consider this an even split right now for the time being. And quickly, I want your advice on the Packers as a possible survivor option. This just seems there's no other teams really alternatives. But does this seem like an obvious trap game going against Belichick? You know, they just beat the Bucks, and then they play in London the next week, and you're facing a backup quarterback. I mean, how many glaring red flags of a trap game is this, or am I overthinking it?
I think you might be overthinking it a little bit. I mean, Brian Hoyer is probably more qualified to be the quarterback coach on this team, maybe more qualified to be the more offensive coordinator on this
team. You're jinxing me.
I'm just saying. I mean, it's in comparison to the guys who are actually the quarterback coach and offensive coordinator that I'm kind of saying that about Brian Hoyer. But still, I don't know. I think you're probably overthinking it a little bit.
New England also among the bottom of the teams in play action this year, too, with those new.
Which is crazy, because weren't they supposed to be installing like a Shanahan offense this year? Wasn't that like Matt Patricia with his big football brain was going to come in there, even though he's had no offensive experience? Like, he's a sharp guy. He's going to install the Shanahan scheme, and they don't run any play action.
Yeah. Ugly.
Yeah, give me a break, New England. Bears at Giants, last game before we move to the primetime games. 39.5 over under. One of these teams, Dalton, is going to be 3-1 by the end of this game.
Wow, that is wild. Justin Fields is throwing an interception on 8.9% of his passes and taking a sack on 18.2% of his dropbacks. That's not great.
Yeah,
Daniel Jones isn't much better either. I mean, they're both fundamentally broken, as they like to say. Both these quarterbacks are really, their trajectories are looking poor, and the poor, you know, your Sterling Shepard injury is not going to help out either, man. Just brutal. It's just the running backs for me here. My guy Barkley, and then is David Montgomery going to suit up? Because Khalil Herbert looks like a fantasy beast. It was just waiting to happen. Man, he looks good.
I mean, the Bears have dropped back 66 times. I almost feel like, regardless of whether David Montgomery, 66 times in three games, Dalton. Like, when you look at the other guys who have dropped back like that few amount of times, it's like Jimmy G, Trey Lance, Cooper Rush, and Dak Prescott. Who doesn't look like the other? And the one guy has started all three games in that mix. It's unbelievable. There might be a chance, like David Montgomery, even if he plays, Khalil Herbert can still be like a fantasy asset, because they just don't want to throw the ball at all. Last point here, Justin Fields. This comes from Graham Barfield. Justin Fields has 23 completions and he's taken 11 sacks through three games. The last time that a quarterback started his first three games with fewer than 25 completions and 10 or more sacks was David Carr in 2005. Tim Couch in 1999 was the last quarterback to do it before Carr. So I also saw a great tweet from Dave Kluge, who said, like, the Bears are simultaneously ruining Justin Fields' development and ruining their draft stock for the next year, all in one fell swoop, which is just, I mean, beautiful poetry by the Chicago Bears. My only thing on this game, it's kind of now or never time for Kadarius Toney. You mentioned Sterling Shepard hurt. Still puking over that one. You know, they're running out like David Sills and Richie James. Kenny Golladay can't catch a pass. And Kadarius Toney still has injury issues. We know that, but like, if he's not going to get on the field at this point, like, I think we're probably already at like it's enough already territory with Kadarius Toney, but like, I kind of think it will definitely be there if he doesn't play in this one.
Yeah. Can he get healthy and can he produce? Man, I got to admit, if Fields were lighting it up, it'd make this Lance situation even more absolutely unbearable for me. But I do hope, do you think it's on him, or because of new coaching staff, or is it the situation? Are you more concerned about he doesn't look good? Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. One quick before we leave about Herbert. Before we move on to the next game, number one in the NFL in explosive rush rate. That's carries that go for 10 yards or more. And after Montgomery left last week, he was third among all running backs in route involvement, too. So as a receiver, too. So, man, I mean, he looks special that he can overcome a horrible environment. And certainly in a week in which, you know, they're facing another bad team. So I really love Herbert if he gets this. Really, I hope he gets an opportunity. I don't want to see Montgomery suffer serious injury. But, man, Herbert just deserves more carries.
100%, man. I completely agree with you. All right, let's move to Sunday Night Football. We're also getting news as we are recording this that this game is going to be played in Tampa as scheduled. Okay. You know, shout out to everybody who, you know, my mom lives in Naples. My mom, my stepdad live in Naples, Florida. Like, it's a crazy situation down there, man. So we're obviously thinking of like real life implication stuff beyond football. Like, this game is going to play be played in Tampa, but everybody, you know, in especially the western part of Florida, you know, Naples, Fort Myers can hit pretty hard. So, you know, my family's okay. That's great. Other people I know are, you know, suffering. So it's tough, man. We're just real stuff going on right beyond football. So,
totally,
you know, thoughts to everybody that is there, and obviously hope that we can all kind of come together and help out that area. But for on this football game, Chiefs -1.5 at Buccaneers, 45.5 total. Man, this game is probably not what we would have expected at the start of the season.
No, it's not. My note I said is, do you consider benching the number 4 fantasy back on the year? That's Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Given your, I have him as my RB31 this week, so you absolutely could have an alternative here. The Bucs have ceded the fewest fantasy points to running backs, one of 3 teams yet to allow a rushing score. But McKinnon has had a higher snap percentage in all 3 games this year. Edwards-Helaire only had a 21% snap percentage in the second half last week. You know, the 3 touchdowns on 34 touches is just not sustainable there. So if you have alternatives, this is the week to consider them given the matchup. I mean, Edwards-Helaire just does not look, he doesn't look anything special, any better than Pacheco either.
Yeah, I think Pacheco eventually gets time in this. I think even Ronald Jones could get back in our lives at some point. I mean, CEH is like literally every fantasy analyst out there is like, sell CEH high, sell CEH high. Oh, your buddies in your league aren't no. listening to all those articles, right? If you're really trying to selling him high or whatever. So we'll see. I agree with you. I think he's not a guy I'm like, I'm trying to start right now if I have him on my roster. And I actually don't know if I have. I might have one CEH team, you know, where he falls to like the 8th round or whatever. And we'll see. For me, it's Mike Evans. Is he right back at the top of the pecking order here at the wide receiver rotation? I mean, that was embarrassing what was going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last week. Scotty Miller can't play. They signed Cole Beasley off the street. And, you know, Russell Gage looks like he's playing like 75% full health. So, you know, I was so big on Mike Evans coming into this year. And, you know, things have been fine to start the year, but he's only played in like 1.5 games so far. So I want to see Mike Evans come in here and turn in like a dominant performance against the Chiefs defense that, you know, Chiefs defense has been fine so far the first few weeks. Like, there's been some mistakes. There's 16th in dropback success rate allowed, like kind of middle of the pack, no man's land there. So I want to see Mike Evans have a big game here.
Yeah, Godwin returned to a limited practice this week. Definitely, let's see the health of them. But yeah, Evans, he has had a suspension. Meanwhile, my guy Gabe Davis might be battling an ankle injury all week. So all year, I mean. So my bet with you, I fear that
Gabe
one.
Davis 11.5 or like 11.7 target percentage.
It's not great.
So far
I know.
Year.
I know. That's not ideal. I know. Evans too, when he last played, it was up there too. So, and that was part of my argument against him. So yeah, that should be a good to know about they're not relocating here. I was curious about that. What about Tom Brady? How's he doing these days? Any thoughts
on
Tom Brady?
Yo, we got to talk about this whole Tom Brady thing, because you and me and Lord Podcast talked about it yesterday. Is Tom Brady cursed? It's worth wondering. I consulted with my wife on this one because she's aware of the witchcraft world. Let's put it that way. There's all these rumors out there. There's all these literal stories are published about how Giselle is like a witch. Like, she does protection spells and she would do all these, you know. And when people say witch, like, for you goofballs out there, like, don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not saying she's like the Wicked Witch of the West, or, you know, she's like the Snow White witch poisoning apples or something like that, right? So, I mean, just be clear about that. But she would do a lot of, you know, mystical type protection things on Tom Brady, on the teams that he was playing with. And now, of course, it's no secret that their marriage is certainly not questionable on the injury report, right? If you want to put it that way. That's been well publicized this year since he returned to the NFL, that she's not happy about that, and that, you know, they might be not even living together at this point. Anyways, hate speculating about that somebody's life, but whatever. Now it's worth wondering, if she's not doing all that stuff for the team anymore, is that why we've seen Brady not look so great? Everybody on this team is injured. I mean, Dalton, the entire offensive, and it's like cluster injuries at spots that would affect Tom Brady, right? Offensive line, skill position players. Is Tom Brady cursed?
Yeah, I mean, they go from always just blessed with not only health, but always in, happens to be in the weakest division of the NFL, no matter what team he's playing for. It just happens to seem to go that way. But now, suddenly, when Giselle and he are having problems, lo and behold, a ton of injuries. All specifically, you're right, I didn't even think of that. Specifically to the wide receiver group and the left tackle and center positions. It really makes you think. It's the actual positions that affect him the most, too. So it's not as if they've had
injuries at like middle linebacker, or kicker or whatever, the special teams unit just destroyed.
Remarkably
by
healthy,
injuries.
In fact. Yeah. The rest of the team remarkably healthy, except for the clusters all at the two positions. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
This
It's something to pay attention to. I consulted my wife about this last night. Can't book her on the podcast because, she's, I don't want that in my life. She's giving me the green light that this might be a thing to keep our eyes on. Of course, Chris Godwin could be coming back healthy, but they push him to come back so early. He's not even like a compensation injury either. It's just like, oh, he pops his hamstring. They signed Julio Jones, injured. Russell Gage, injured. Mike Evans, suspended. Offensive line, destroyed by injuries. So I don't know, this whole Tom Brady Giselle witchcraft situation, it's worth keeping our eyes on, and we here at the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast promise to be at the forefront of this discussion and this news story, so you keep it here to me and Dalton for all of your witchcraft needs.
Love it. Even Perryman's questionable missing practice,
It doesn't stop. All right, let's move on to the last game we've got to talk about here. We've saved your 49ers for the end here, Dalton. They're favorites in this game, 1.5 points at home, 42 over under. Dalton's thing for on this game is bet the under.
Yeah, I'll be subjecting myself to this going to this game. The over-under opened at 47.5. It's down to 42, so really don't, really. The closing line value is bad, but this has 30-17 written all over it. The Niners have allowed an NFL low 3.9 yards per play. Here's the tight ends have combined for 6 targets, 3 catches, 23 yards over 3 games.
The 49ers tight ends.
The 49ers. Sorry.
I saw Hayden Winks tweet out his like fantasy usage graphic. I'm pretty sure they're second to last only to the frickin' Bears in tight end fantasy usage.
Oh, wow. That too. Yeah. Offensively, they ignore George Kittle as well. Yes, that is true. And a tough matchup for Jeff Wilson here. Rams, a top 5 run D. Do you know that there were rumors in Niners circles that Tevin Coleman would have been the RB2 if not for his sickle cell he has, because they played in Denver last week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, don't be shocked if Tevin Coleman is the Niners RB2 this week, even though I have Jordan Mason everywhere. But so it's, just Jimmy G's lack of practice. Or if you want to make that excuse, whatever the reason, he was awful last week. Now no Trent Williams. But the Niners defense looks really legit. And did you realize that over Matt Stafford's last 6 regular season games, he has 10 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Now he had a nice playoff run, of course, that counts, winning the Super Bowl. But it's just they're struggling, Allen Robinson and all that. So I don't know. I just see this being a low scoring game. Obviously, you're rolling with Cooper Kupp, but I'm benching Matthew Stafford and keeping my expectations lowered. Deebo Samuel, an article came out that said Peter King's claiming that Mike McDaniel was the secret to Debo's rushing success. Obviously, you're still using Deebo, but bottom line, expectations keep in check this week. It's going to be a low scoring Monday nighter.
Yeah, like the Rams offense really needs to get going. They had a couple of drives against the Falcons, but weren't even perfect there. And then their whole passing offense, other than like Ben Skoranek leaking out, like doing literally running sail routes from the fullback position, that's like their best play, and like a rushing play to Cooper Kupp. Otherwise, they were mostly a disaster in that Cardinals game as well. We know that they got shellacked in week one. Meanwhile, though, the 49ers rank number 1 in dropback success rate allowed. They rank number 4 in rushing success rate allowed. Like, this defense is not the get right spot that the Rams need. And I mean, the Rams always get their ass kicked by the 49ers too, right? Like, I'm a little, yeah. I always lose track of like who owns who in the NFC West, but I'm pretty sure the 49ers own the Rams.
Yeah, I knew that my Niners were due to lose the conference championship game because, yes, they had won like five straight against the Rams. Yes. So, yeah, and it's the typical Niner get right after looking totally ugly last week in that game in which their offense somehow scored 10 points, their defense allowed 9 points, and they lost, and where the Rams are coming off a couple wins, and they're kind of masking a lot of problems, the issues. Like you said, they faced a Arizona league-worst defense recently, you know. So
and they didn't even look that good.
Right, right, totally. Both these teams have major issues on offense and pretty good defense. By the way, the Rams are shutting. They have a bunch of injuries on corner other than Ramsey, yet they're playing really well too. So, or at least recently they have. So, I expect a low scoring game.
Got smoked by Marquise Brown though last
you're right.
Week.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. So I don't know. I mean, it's just I think guys like. You're probably stuck playing Debo, even though it's not, he's not done much. And Kyle Shanahan was even like, yeah, we're not taking anybody by surprise with the whole like Debo rushing stuff like we maybe were last year. Although that is an interesting point that even last season when McDaniel was in the national spotlight as he was getting coaching interviews and, you know, he just was getting more attention. That was the talking point, was that he and Debo would sit down and craft the running game plan. So this isn't even like a new theory by Peter King. I mean, I would just say like he's the mastermind of it. Or he was the key to it. Maybe not, but he was certainly a big part of putting that together. So that's a good thing to point out. But I mean, for the fringy guys on these two teams, not really gassed up to start Cam Akers, even though he's like started to sort of take the backfield back over. He also fumbled at the goal line to end that last game. We don't know if he would have, you know, been punished for that or whatever, because the game was pretty much over by that point. Allen Robinson, I mean, oh my God, like, I don't
know. Did you see the back-to-back plays at the goal line last week where he dropped one and then he what?
The drop. Oh, did I see? Did I see the drop? Did I see the drop? Yeah, that was ugly. Had a pretty big catch later on in the game where he got tackled at the 1 yard line and then Cam Akers fumbled it. I'm pretty sure that was how that sequence went. But I don't know. Robinson, it's just like he's just clearly not fully integrated there, and it definitely looks like he's a step slower than he used to be. I'll cop to that. So, we'll see. I don't know. The Rams need like a little more juice other than Ben Skowronek as a fullback in their offense right now, but this is really not the spot to do it. And then on the 49ers side, like Brandon Ayuk, I think, you know, it's going to be, there are going to be plays left on the field because it's Jimmy Garoppolo, but I feel pretty good about Ayuk in this game because they do get burned on some deeper passes. They can get burned on like crossing routes over the middle of the Rams defense. So I don't know. It's not the worst spot to use Ayuk, not the worst spot to use Allen Robinson, because he gets all those goal line targets. He gets red zone targets, end zone targets. Like, they're clearly trying to get him going, but I don't know, man. Not the best fantasy game. I agree with you on betting the under at this one.
They've been using Ayuk all over the field, and I don't like to make excuses for Jimmy G. It's a weird spot for Niners fans. You know, he's laughing after the game, smiling, and there's footage of him yelling, play calling, but man, he's just missed. He made so many just egregious, awful
Jimmy,
plays. Step up into the pocket one time.
And no Trent Williams now.
Yeah, I know. No, there is an excuse, though, that he was coming off shoulder surgery and was lack of practice time. There's at least a little bit of that. But boy, he should know the system and all that. And it was ugly. It's bad. I mean, that's why, part of me
was
like
same old Jimmy, Dalton. I'm like, what do you mean? Excuses. Like I've seen that Jimmy Garoppolo game 50 times.
I was in a weird spot, whereas if Jimmy Garoppolo looked great on Sunday night, I was going to get irritated as a Lance guy, because there was this narrative that it quietly saved their season, you know, and all this. I'm like, dude, no, it might have. I get why maybe the point spread moved a couple points for this week, but long-term upside, you just saw it. I mean, Garoppolo ain't it. So yeah, very frustrating. He might have been better than the other backups, but it's still a devastating loss to Trey Lance. Not for fantasy managers, but also people who root for the 49ers, because boy, Garoppolo looked awful.
This is like the pain of being a real fan, is that like that's a lose-lose situation for you. Even if like your team wins, you're like, well, shoot, but then this guy did it, and then it proves all those, like, yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one for you, Dalton, and obviously that's the big point of the podcast is how does Dalton feel about the 49ers?
Yeah, so, thanks for more therapy. Good talking with you. Sorry if we ran long. Good stuff. Good luck with everyone's matchups.
Previews always run long. Yeah, good luck to everybody out there in week 4. But that is going to do it for us. You can follow Dalton on Twitter at Dalton Del Don. You can follow me at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make sure you're following the @YahooFantasy account for fantasy news and perhaps some fun. Maybe, you never know. If you'd like to support the show, we'd love it if you would. Make sure you leave a 5-star review on whichever podcast platform you're listening on. It would go a long way to helping us out. And of course, if you don't like the show, you just tell me that directly. Everyone's not for everyone. I'm not for everyone. Dalton should be for everyone, though, so there is that. Scott Pienowski also should be for everyone, and he's going to be back on Monday morning with a recap of the weekend action. Until then, we're out.